Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. The South Dakota Symphony Orchestra performs Bach's B Minor Mass this weekend. It's Saturday, April 22nd at 7:30, matinee Sunday, April 23rd at 2:30. There's a post-performance panel discussion on Sunday we'll talk about here in a minute. But first, we're broadcasting live today from the SDPB studios at the University of Sioux Falls. Seated across the table from me, Chad Hutchinson. I don't know your official title.
I'm the Assistant Conductor of the South Dakota Symphony and Music Director of the South Dakota Symphony Youth Orchestra Program.
Every concert you do sort of a preview in one of the hallways there at the pavilion, right?
Absolutely. So we have two opportunities for people to learn more about the music they're about to hear. Maestro Geyer presents a talk in the hall at 6:30, an hour before each performance. And he goes a little bit more in depth on lots of different topics and oftentimes has some of the soloists there. And I started a new concert chat about a year and a half ago called 7 at 7. So at 7 o'clock on the third floor lobby, although this week we'll be in Leonardo's Cafe, I, for about 15 minutes, give seven things that you kind of need to know going into the concert. It's mainly started as being geared toward high school and collegiate students because I was really passionate about more information for those, that age group and getting them more involved in classical music. And it's kind of grown into its own thing now where we have close to the Don Giovanni concert. We had around 60-65 people right there.
So I was there for that. That was used the whole floor space there.
There's
reenacting and all kinds of things when we did opera. So that's really kind of one of the fun things, though, about the 7 at 7 is to see all those youth orchestra kids. You know, some of them are dressed up. Some have got their jeans and their sneakers on. Some of them have brought their friends. Some of them have drugged their parents. And they come up, and so it's a huge youth audience for that 7 at 7. And then they sort of disperse into the great hall, and you can't necessarily see them, but you know that they're there.
As the director of the youth orchestra program, it's one of the most fulfilling things to see the amount of young adults and young musicians that are coming to hear the symphony. And it's really cool to talk about it in rehearsal and say, this is an opera that you should see. If you've never seen an opera, go see Don Giovanni, go see La Boheme. And then to see them at intermission or after the concert and how excited they are after experiencing that for the first time. And it brings you back as a performer to one of the first times that you got to experience something that completely changed your scope. Yeah. And Bach's B Minor Mass obviously is a piece in that realm. Yeah. As it goes.
And the symphony has done a lot to make those tickets affordable for youth.
Absolutely.
Youth as well.
We have a great program called the Crescendo Program, and basically anybody under the age of 18 gets in free with a paid adult ticket. So for high school students, it's cheaper than going to a movie. Mm-hmm. And then we have multiple other things. If you've never been to a symphony concert before, you just go up to the box office and say, I would love to see a symphony concert, and they will set you up with tickets. Young adults under the age of 40 also get in with reduced ticket prices and such. So we're trying to really bring the next generation and get them involved in classical music. And having been to a lot of other concert halls around the country, the audiences we see here in Sioux Falls are way more diverse and much younger than most anywhere I've ever been.
And for some of these kids, this is you know, kind of finding their tribe, too. It's a social event. It happens throughout the winter. There's, you know, only so many things to do in their community. They drive in from out of town. They, you know, get a ride from a friend in Sioux Falls or whatever. And they're hanging out together talking about classical music.
Absolutely. When I taught at Roosevelt High School years ago, there used to be a group of about 10 kids that would go. And they would get all dressed up. They'd find a nice restaurant downtown, they'd eat, and they made a whole evening of it. And that kind of piqued my interest. So when I was hired by the symphony a year and a half ago, when we came back to town, it was something that I thought, you know, this could really take off. And now I see this whole group of youth orchestra students, and not just students involved in the youth orchestra. We see students involved in choir programs and band programs, collegiate music programs coming in. And it does create its own little community now, and it's cool. It's cool to come to the symphony, and it's cool to hear the amazing music that the South Dakota Symphony musicians and Maestro Geyer you know, disseminate then into the audience.
Now you get to see these kids afterwards, many of them, you know, the next week at rehearsal for the youth orchestra. Are there things throughout the season they respond more positively to? Are they honest with their responses where they say, you know, that wasn't just for me? Or do they love everything because it's such a, you know, a rich offering for them?
I think it's a little of each. I think each student is unique in that sense, in the fact that sometimes a certain piece of music really speaks to them and it completely changes their focus. For others, they say, oh, that was nice. And then they find ways to critique it. So they're learning higher order thinking skills, and they're deciding, you know, is this a piece that I enjoy now or not? When I was that age, there were composers that really spoke to me, and there were other composers that I was not as into. And now that I've aged, I look back at my 20-year-old self and say, oh, I didn't get it, you know? And and Brahms was one of those composers for me. And I remember famously telling my collegiate music history teacher, I said, Brahms 4th is one of the worst symphonies that I've ever heard, and I don't know why people like it. And all he said to me is, he said, Chad, call me back in 10 years when you get it. And I was kind of taken aback by that. But I did write him a letter and actually called him personally 8 years later, once I did get it and realized what an amazing composer Brahms was.
What did you hear as an adult that you hadn't heard as a student?
Great music has depth, you know, and when you see, well, great art in any way has depth. When you go to the Art Museum in Chicago and you see a Van Gogh up close and you see how thick the paint is, and you can almost tell like the angst at times of how he was painting that. Or when you see Rembrandt or Monet, Renoir, like when you see it up close. And I think with Brahms, I didn't realize the depth of the music and how it was composed. When I really started then studying music theory on a deeper level and seeing that he takes a small germ of three or four notes or even an interval and creates an entire symphony out of that germ, similar to Beethoven, but in a slightly different way, then I started to understand like the depth and breadth of Brahms' writing. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what has completely changed my appreciation of Brahms over the years.
Let's talk about the B minor Mass.
Sure.
Where do we begin with this? Because Bach is a Lutheran and this is a Mass. And so that's putting two things together in my head that don't always go together. Give me some background there.
Absolutely. So I had the great fortune last year of getting to travel to Germany with the University of Minnesota. And we went to Leipzig, and we saw the Nikolaikirche and the Thomaskirche where Bach wrote these works. And to be in that place when somebody then played an organ, I mean, it brought tears to your eyes because you realized that you were in the exact same place that he was creating music. Hundreds of years ago. And Bach was a church musician. It's what he did. He traveled quite extensively in the fact that he lived in over 12 or 13 different residences throughout his lifetime. But Leipzig kind of ended up being his home later in life. And with this is where he wrote most all of his really great works. But yes, so much of his writing was for the church. It was part of the everyday goings-on of the church. It was part of Holy Week, his most famous pieces, the B minor Mass, notwithstanding, but we also have the St. John Passion and the St. Matthew Passion. Those were performed for Holy Week. The crazy thing about the B minor Mass is Bach knew that it would never be performed in his lifetime because he was reusing a Roman Catholic Mass text. He was Lutheran. He knew that there wouldn't be a place for it. So he never heard it. We have sections of it that were performed in church and such, because it's kind of a piecemeal composition. It has all these different aspects that are all then pulled together, but he knew that the overall product he would never see.
So why did he write it?
As Bach aged, and I think as we all age, we start to think back and think about legacy. And he looked back, and he from what people gather, he kind of wanted to write something that would be the quintessential experience of vocal choral music at that time. And so he wrote this over a 25-year period, and he took things from a Gloria that he had written earlier. He then added at the very end parts of an Agnus Dei and the Hosanna. And so he kind of was summing up his entire life of writing and putting it all into this amazing composition. Similar to what he did with the fugue, he wrote something called The Art of the Fugue, which is, for keyboard or organ, one of the most extensive sets of fugues ever written. So he takes all of these ideas. He takes a fugue, which has different subjects and different ideas. He takes a motet, which started in the Renaissance period, which is a vocal form. He took da capo aria, which had been used, and da capo means you sing the A section of an aria, then the B section, and da capo, you go back to the beginning and you sing it again. And so he takes all these different forms of vocal music that were at his disposal, and he uses it in different ways throughout this masterwork.
Is he, exercising his creativity or in the mastery of a craft at this point?
Absolutely.
Do you see signs of that? Do you think is he self-aware that where he's at in his career, in his life?
So Bach died in 1750, and he was still working on this in 1749.
Old is he?
So he was born in 1685, died in 1750. So for his time, he was quite old.
Okay.
But yes, he's in his 70s when he's finishing working on this. And so he is aware, I think, that he has fewer days ahead of him, than he had in the past. And because of that, he takes things that he had written almost 20 years ago and then reworks them. So he takes changes the text in certain ways, changes the orchestration, and by that different instrument combinations to make it then work. And the thing that's amazing about this work is he did take all of these things from over 20 years, but it's so well structured and unified. People looking at it now, you wouldn't know. It's like it had all been composed at one time.
How do we know? Is it through the scholarship of someone saying, look, this piece is from here and it was changed this way, or
yes.
did he leave behind some kind of writings, right, or journals? What do we know about?
It's through scholarship. There have been many people that have devoted their lives to studying Bach and studying his music, but we find these melodies and specific texts and such that he's used and had performed back as early as in the 1720s, 1730s. So we know that these are from other pieces at times, and then he's changed them. Composers do this all the time. Stravinsky is famous for this. Stravinsky would have this, and then, all of a sudden it shows up here, in something else. And we have to think of Bach's time. He didn't have cut and paste.
He's
writing with ink and on paper, and he had a copyist and some other people at his disposal, but so much of this was a pure labor of love on his part of physically writing out all of these parts.
When you mentioned Van Gogh earlier, then you can certainly see different themes that Van Gogh returns to, or that artists return to as well. And now, mm-hmm. talking about composers, are there themes or ideas or things that Bach just isn't done with yet, and you see him returning to again and again? And are those faith related? Are those placing him in his culture, his time?
In Bach's case, it's all faith related and dealing then with the text. How he portrays the text is what sets him apart from other composers. Just like with later composers, when we see the development section, how we take these ideas and kind of work with them. In Bach's day, it's how in the Crucifixus movement we use a passacaglia. And a passacaglia is just a repeated pattern of notes. And it's not tons of notes. He uses a small amount to really portray one of the most horrific acts that we've, experienced in life. And so we're talking about the crucifixion, and he has this descending line. And it's that simplicity of then putting a line on top of a descending line and how that all kind of comes together that sets Bach apart. Hmm. So he does use... It's all text-based. Everything, these amazing moments when something is offset ever so slightly, he's in the text, then we're talking about a change. Well, right. He's using it then in music. He's showing you in the music exactly what you are to hear. So even though this is in Latin, if you know no Latin or you're not looking at a translation, you can experience what he's trying to portray just in how well it's set.
So if you're just tuning in, my guest is Chad Hutchinson. He's the assistant conductor of the South Dakota Symphony Orchestra. We're talking about Bach's B minor Mass, which you can see the Symphony Orchestra play this weekend. Saturday, April 22nd, 7:30. Sunday, April 23rd, 2:30. And then after that concert, stick around for a post-concert panel discussion with Delta David Geyer, Pastor John Christofferson from First Lutheran, Father Charles Simple from Holy Spirit Parish, Pastor J. Mark Bertrand from Grace Presbyterian, and James Johnson, the chorus master of the South Dakota Symphony Orchestra. We've got about a minute or two left, Chad. What do you want to say about how the South Dakota Symphony Orchestra is, staging this, the singers? You know, what do we need to know about Saturday night?
I think that the guest soloists coming in are of note. They are all soloists who have sung with the orchestra before, so people that have been to the symphony regularly will recognize them. But they're top-notch Bach soloists. Hannah Liu and Nicole Warner both were here last year to do the Pergolesi Stabat Mater. Hannah Liu has done Handel's Messiah with the orchestra a lot of times. But there are certain voices that work well for Bach and certain voices that don't. And these are voices that match well with Bach. They're a little bit lighter, not as much vibrato laden as like a huge Wagner soprano or alto. But stylistically, it's just what he would have used in his time. And we have an excellent tenor coming back, Joshua Cole and Stephen Bryant as well. So I think in addition to all the great musicians of the South Dakota Symphony, to hear vocalists of this caliber to all collaborate on a work of this magnitude is something special to behold this weekend.
It has been a truly remarkable season as well. So Saturday night, April 22nd, South Dakota Symphony Orchestra performing Bach's B minor Mass. That's at the Washington Pavilion in Sioux Falls. And then Sunday matinee at 2:30. Stick around for that post-concert panel discussion. That would be a very interesting conversation as well. Chad Hutchinson, I could keep you on for another hour and we can keep talking, but I'll let you go back because I know you've got a busy schedule.